One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Welcome back, everyone. 32 after the hour, and joining us today for our Cops Say Legalize Drugs segment, we have Teresa Smallwood. She's a former prosecutor from Chicago, Illinois. Teresa, welcome to the show.
Why, thank you, Russ. It's good to be with you.
It's good to have you here, and I see from your bio you had done your work in Chicago, Illinois, and my goodness, we know a lot about Chicago as far as the street violence goes, the gang warfare, and the influence of drugs on both of those subjects. Give us a little of your background and how you came to recognize the drug war was a flawed failure.
Well, certainly. Actually, I did all of my prosecutorial work in North Carolina, but it's a very similar venue in terms of how the drug war actually works. I've done most of my social justice and my engagement as it relates to my own theological work here in Chicago, and that, of course, has presented me with a good bit of statistical information. But as a prosecutor, what I came to understand after being in the business for over 4 years was the fact that I was creating a revolving door that was making absolutely no impact on people's lives or on the lives of the community. We kept seeing generation after generation go to prison, come back, and it was the same old cycle. It wasn't until I actually joined the ranks of the criminal defense attorneys that I came to realize that what we really were doing was sending people who were addicted to a place that could not help them. And so I became convinced of the fact that we can do something different. We can do something more responsible, both to our communities, to our precious law enforcement personnel, and to the people who use drugs. We can do a whole lot more humane approach that gives everyone the opportunity to be safe and to operate within the confines of what I believe are real moral principles.
When we first heard of Michelle Alexander and her book, The New Jim Crow, it woke a lot of people up to the racial disparities and how they were intended disparities in drug war policing. Can you give us an idea, you know, as a prosecutor in North Carolina, how you saw the drug war affecting families, particularly black families and particularly black women, as they've been swept up in this drug war as girlfriends and wives and getting conspiracy charges that had nothing to do with them actually using or touching drugs?
Yeah, I mentioned earlier the notion of how generations were really affected. And in one family, Russ, my experience was I sent the grandfather, the father, and then the young son all to prison behind drugs. And what happened was at the point in time the young son was actually arrested, his girlfriend who was pregnant was on the car. And naturally in small town USA, we tend to convict by association, unfortunately. So despite the fact that she had no drugs on her body and could not have been really aware of what was on the car, because she was, you know, just simply not in tune with exactly how sophisticated and complex his particular operation was. But she simply was a part of the scene. She was arrested, put in jail, and actually convicted. And, of course, gave birth to a child while still in prison. So the idea here is that the war on drugs has literally become a war on families. And what we see is that the fallout comes particularly in communities that are disparately treated. Now, I don't mean at all to cast aspersions upon our law enforcement generally. I have worked successfully across the aisle with so many of them, and I have tremendous respect for law enforcement generally. But I can say truthfully that my experience in at least three different locales extensively shows that the system itself has disproportionately affected African Americans and to some degree the Latino population. And so what I began to see when I moved my own investigation into the District of Columbia, my real drug war ending work started there, because at that point the ACLU got involved in helping young pastors to really see what the difference was. And there were two specific zip codes that most of the drug convictions were coming from. And where were they? They were in the city's highest, most densely populated black communities. When we were able to bring the criminalization issue to the forefront and the people voted and they were actually willing to legalize marijuana, it was because preachers stepped up and understood the complex nature of how the war was being dispatched upon that particular community.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Teresa. I also note from your bio that for over a decade now, you've been ordained as a Baptist minister with a PhD in theology, ethics, and human sciences. And one thing that's always concerning to me for years working as a marijuana reform advocate is how much opposition we would find from the black church, particularly, you know, Southern Baptists, for example. And I always felt that that was an example of mistaking the harms of prohibition for the harms of the drugs themselves. Can you give us a little insight on how clergy are coming around on this issue?
Well, you know, I've had the pleasure of working alongside a number of different organizations going after the same issue. And there is at least one group that has national standing now where we have a clergy group of people across the nation. And it's called Clergy for a New Drug Policy. What we are doing is basically waking up the people who claim morality to realize that true morality is a test of our will towards our human kind. And that simply means that preachers are coming to understand that they have to go below the surface to evaluate what's happening and why we need to do something differently. And so I'm very, very happy to be in conversation with that particular organization. I don't run it, and I'm not here today representing them, but I do know that that particular aspect of the work is afoot, and there's a gentleman by the name of Al Sharp who is running a very, very sophisticated opportunity here to just wake people up, people who are in the faith.
Glad to hear that. We're speaking with Teresa Smallwood. She's a former prosecutor, defense attorney, and Baptist minister who is a speaker for law enforcement against prohibition. They got great speakers all around the United States, Canada, and around the world. If you need someone to come out to your Lions Club, your Elks Club, your Rotary meeting, your PTA meeting, whatever it might be, they've got someone for you. Just visit leap.cc. Now, Teresa, another aspect of this has been very interesting to me. The Black Lives Matter movement has done a phenomenal job of spotlighting the racial nature, the disproportionate nature of police enforcement against black people. And we found in the states that have legalized marijuana, even though we've legalized, and part of the reason we did so was because of the disproportionate racial impact, but even though we've legalized, we're finding that what crimes still remain are still being racially enforced, more disproportionately against black and Latino people. So my question is the drug war just a tool that enforces the existing racist system, or is it the cause of the existing racist system?
Well, you know, that is a very probative question, Russ, and I really appreciate it. The deep analysis for me starts with how policy is put in place in this country. If we were to go back in history and look at what caused us to turn our attention towards drugs and why we even call this a war on drugs, we would realize that essentially ghettos and what we call the places in our various communities where there is a high concentration of crime, we would understand that people, human beings, didn't request or create ghettos, but policy created ghettos. And so as a result of that, what we have is a fallout from the root cause, which I believe has an economic component. Now, Michelle Alexander was able to draw this point out very clearly. But what we also know is that in response to anything we think is aberrant or outside the norm, what we have done historically in this country, and it's really all over the world, is to criminalize the thing that we don't really want to put our finger on, or criminalize the thing that we have considered to be outside the norm of our morality.
Mm. Yeah, a morality tale, absolutely. I've brought that up many times before. And it's fascinating to me, too, Teresa, that as we look at the criminal justice system and how it is being reformed, we're finding more prosecutors even who are coming over to our side, people that continually say, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've heard the revolving door comment from our speakers at Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And it's just something that is going to have to be addressed lest we continue to suffer these disproportionate impacts. I want to thank Teresa Smallwood for joining us here on the show. She's we've lost our connection with her. You may have heard the little Skype beep there, but we were just about at the end of the interview anyway. My thanks to Teresa Smallwood and all the folks at Law Enforcement Against Prohibition for bringing us these great speakers in our Cops Say Legalize Drugs segment every other Thursday here on the Russ Belville Show. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will hear from Patrick Seifert and Michael Kravitz from Seattle Hemp Fest on the epidemic of veteran suicides.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.